No stopping. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. Yes, 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping. So, can we still call this a continuity off if we're listing off, doing like a Dave Letterman favorites list?
I think we can.
All right.
It's still matching continuity.
Yeah. So we've got our top three Blue Jays or Blue Angels flying overhead. But we have our top three continuity twists, plot twists. Is there a word for what we're talking about? Things that happen in comics that surprise us and were surprisingly good.
Let's just say our favorite bits of continuity.
There we go. I will roll with that.
We don't always have to have a title.
Yeah. And titles don't always have to be good.
My top one, to be honest, Superboy Punching Time. Okay. Especially once they got the Ambush Bug book in.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that he was punching time because Ambush Bug was stuck in there with him and annoying him so much.
Yeah. Is that your most favorite, or are you doing least to most?
Or I'm just not doing random? It in any particular order.
All right.
I just love that. The way that, and that's how Jason Todd came back to life, and just anything and fixing discrete things.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to fix the entire universe. We can just say, okay, that wasn't working.
Batman no longer a jerk. Who knew?
Yes. Just any little problem, just like, oh, that never happened.
Yeah.
And keep going without wrecking the whole thing.
Or doing an they did do an entire crisis about it, but I was surprised at how, like, elegantly that could have worked. Because it's such a weird idea, like Superboy Prime punching, you know, the walls of reality and fixing things. And really, like, you could do, like you said, anything you want. And it's just true. I think they could have run with that and had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Green Arrow is no longer...
And you still can.
Yeah. I guess it hasn't gone away.
Yes. That's what happens when you punch reality.
You know, there's... did you read Marvel Zombies? Probably not.
No.
Yeah. It started with... basically, someone punched the walls of reality and broke through. Mm-hmm. And was a zombie and ate, you know, like everyone on Earth or whatever. But it was clear that at first it was supposed to be Superman instead of Marvel's fake Superman, because he had the S curl in his hair and like the Superman costume.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another neat bit where they tied into Superboy Prime punching things. You know, in the end they had to backpedal from his son because obviously you can't do crossovers, but that was kind of neat. And one of my favorites is there was a minor character, medium to minor character in Garth Ennis and John McCree's Hitman called Catherine McAllister, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a CIA agent who was trying to help the Tommy Monaghan, you know, the hitman of the title, who's never actually called Hitman in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But trying to help him...
Like the Birds of Prey were never called the Birds of Prey.
Exactly. She's trying to keep him from getting killed while he's trying to rescue another woman. And they have, like, this kind of thing where... they don't love each other yet, but it's clear they're going to end up loving each other. And because of that, they're both doing one last job. And she has a very good line about how whenever anyone goes on a one last job, if it's for themselves, it's never their last job. Mm-hmm. But if they have someone to lean on and depend on, it will be their last job. But anyway, things happen. Well, actually, the book ends like the way Ennis planned, and we never hear from her again. She doesn't appear at all in the DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Ennis's Punisher Max from Marvel, Catherine O'Brien shows up, and she mentions, like, oh, I've been married a couple times, and I've changed my last name. And then she finally says, in the last story arc she appears in, she talks about poor doomed Tommy, and it's clear that she's the exact same character from Hitman that Ennis just brought back across companies very sneakily. And
subtle.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, like, he just added a lot of nice little layers to that character by doing that. Like, she's much more interesting. And when I realized this, it was like just my entire brain exploded. I was like, mm-hmm. That is so awesome. Really fun. Next.
I am going to make a very special exception. You will never hear me make it again.
Oh, wow.
It's someone dying.
Wow.
And it is Ted Kord.
Uh-huh.
Not in The Crisis, but in the Booster Gold book, mm-hmm. where he knew what was going to happen, but he had to save the universe.
Oh, yeah.
So he just, like, cheerfully went to his death while Booster was just like, no, and just turned around and, like, smiled and, like,
did his quahaha.
Yes. Just happily.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm just like, tears pouring down my face as I am reading it. I'm just like, oh, Ted, truly, you were the greatest hero of all.
Wow.
And, okay, I still like it that they kind of implied that he came back, because everyone comes back now.
Mm-hmm.
I like everyone coming back.
Blackest Night, like maybe it'll end with a mass resurrection.
But seriously, that was just, I felt that they fixed a mistake in a very, I guess, wonderful way.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't condescending, that wasn't like, oh, they were never dead.
Yeah.
Or anything. Oops, that was someone else. It was
a Doombot.
It was a clone. It was a robot. It was an alien. It was a shapeshifter, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. It really got me, but just, aw.
There was an ongoing thing John Byrne used to do when he was doing Fantastic Four, mm-hmm. where whenever Dr. Doom showed up in someone else's comic and Byrne didn't like how he was portrayed, he was like, oh, that was a Doom robot.
Huh?
Like, repeatedly, you know, to the point where it's like a punchline now. And same thing with Thanos, the fake Dark Side Marvel has,
mm-hmm.
where it was a doppelganger or a clone.
Yeah.
But I feel like Blue Beetle's gotten more attention since they decided he was going to die than he did before.
That's true.
Because, like, he had bit parts in Birds of Prey sometimes, which kind of didn't go anywhere, I don't think. I guess there was this vague romance between him and Barbara.
Okay, that was funny.
Yeah.
They decided, they had this issue that was just them going off in the bug because Barbara really liked the car. And Ted being retired, so he was seriously like flipping burgers, and
yeah.
they had like him getting fat.
I thought he had a heart problem or something, didn't he? High cholesterol, I don't know.
But and they just started tooling around town and were like spying on people and laughing yeah. at them mainly. And then a train caught fire and a kid was caught, and so Barbara piloted the bug while Ted like squeezed back into the suit and went on the one last mission and
yeah.
then like brought the kid up, and they were kind of half flirting the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And then just as they were getting close for the kiss, they were just like, I have to tell you something. At the same time, Barbara saying, I'm seeing someone, and him saying, I think we should just be friends. And then being like, looking at each other, and then just the exterior of the bug, and them both like laughing like crazy. I thought that was a fantastic way to conclude a romance. Not
yeah.
like, you betrayed me, or
tears
anything.
And blood. And
just being like, oh, we didn't actually like each other that much to begin with. That's hilarious.
That is pretty good.
Wait.
Oh, man.
Maybe Ted Kord just brings good continuity.
That's possible. The Justice League stuff back in the day was always good.
Yeah.
He had, like, a one-panel appearance in Grant Morrison's Justice League, mm-hmm. where it's, like, almost the end of the world. Like, the giant god-eating monster is coming from the depths of space, and it's just him and Booster Gold sitting on the steps. And they're like, oh, end of the world again, Ted. And he's like, yep, sure is, you know, Booster. And then they go like, wah-ha-ha, and it cuts to a different page. It's like a nice little nod, like, hey, you know, like, this stuff happens all the time. They still like their jobs.
Yes.
Man. All right, so my second one, I guess, was a Daredevil plot twist, continuity twist. There's this book, Daredevil Battling Jack Murdock.
Uh-huh.
It's about Daredevil's dad, and basically it's about Daredevil's dad, so it sounds completely kind of useless, sort
mm-hmm.
of. Like, it's not really a story we needed to be told.
Like, ooh, a prequel.
Yeah, like,
we always like to hear about those.
It's kind of a boxing comic, because, mm-hmm. you know, his dad was a boxer, so each issue is begins and ends on his last boxing match before he died. And previously, it was that he used to fix fights, basically. And that was the way to make money and get out of debt with the mob. But in the last fight he was supposed to fix, he realized that his son, even though he was blinded, he was still attending the fight. And he was like, I've been such, like, a jerk. I screwed up. Like, I've taught my son the wrong thing. And I'm not going to go down in this fight because that would just be, like, solidifying this bad lesson that I taught him. Which is very good. So he wins the fight, and then he's shot in the head by the bad guys, which gives Daredevil, you know, more angst. Mm-hmm. But in this one, it's revealed that the reason why he decided to win the fight was because he realized that his son had powers and was going to become something great. Because basically he recognizes a bruise on his son's face. Mm-hmm. And it's like during the fight, and he's like, oh, holy crap, my son was not weak at all. Like, you know, I've actually raised a good man, so I can go out on a high point. Mm-hmm. And he basically beats the snot out of the guy. And then when the bad guys come to shoot him, and they're like, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, we're going to kill you, Jack, and then we're going to go after your son. And he's like, yeah, you go after my son. We'll see how that ends. And, and he laughs.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and he laughs, and then he dies. And it's I don't know. Like, this is a really good and sad story.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of twist that I really liked.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, like the Blue Beetle thing, like, it fixes something that maybe not have been a mistake, but was sort of like super cliche. Mm-hmm. And turns it into something like true, you know, fatherly love. Yeah, he hugs his son and he's like, you know, you gotta follow your own gut now, Matt. You're a man and I'm so damn proud of you.
Oh.
Yeah, that was the last thing he said to his son. Really good. And like, it's pretty bloody because, you know, boxing. Yeah. But like, I really liked how it recontextualized, if that's actually a word, like a classic scene from an old comic.
I believe that is a word.
Good, because if not, I just made it up. But yeah, good read. Totally worth it. And it's just like 4 issues. It was, when I reread it recently, I looked online to see what people said about it. I actually found a review from our friend Graham McMillan, and he's like, why does this exist? So I'm gonna have to force him to reread it next time I see him and get his opinion.
See, the third one. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a little continuity wrinkle. It's nothing big. It never was anything big. Mm-hmm. But I just liked it. Tim had a girlfriend, Tim Drake, the Robin 3. Had a girlfriend at the beginning of his book, Ariana. Mm-hmm. And her parents, like, ran a grocery store, and they were happy and had the regular early teenage... Okay, I think I might actually be ill because I don't think a well person's stomach can make that noise. But, okay, they had the regular teenage just stuff.
Yeah.
Good dates, bad dates, a few...
skip dates because there was a gang war.
A few, like, issue of the week or problems, but
a very special issue.
Special.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at one point her family isn't doing well in Gotham, and so they're gonna sell the store. Mm-hmm. And move out of Gotham to someplace that's cheaper and less crime ridden. And so they're gonna have to break up, and Tim goes all depressed into the cave, and it's just like, and just talks to Alfred, just being like, I'm really sad about this. I mean, we're young and we don't know much yet, but I guess we're in love, and I really wish she didn't have to go. Mm-hmm. And you see, like, the bat gloves and boots, just, and like a little flutter of cape in the background. Mm-hmm. And then the next time he sees her, she's like, oh, guess what? Wayne Industries wanted to buy the entire building, and so they gave us a really, really great price for our store. And so we're going to be able to stay in Gotham after all. And hooray! And Tim's just like, oh, yay! And in part, I love it because it is heartwarming. I mean, it's genuinely something that Bruce did quietly just to make the people around him, their lives easier.
Mm-hmm.
And in part, I like it because he literally bought Tim a girlfriend.
Oh, man.
I just like that it really exemplifies him, where it's just, it's really sweet and it's crazy messed up.
Yeah.
All at the same time.
Money solves everything. They had a lesson to learn from that.
Except then Stephanie Brown hit him with a brick and he went and fell in love with her.
Did she actually hit him with a brick?
She did. Like their first... the first time they supposedly met in Robin.
Yeah.
They've met before.
Mm-hmm.
But that was... She was older and was kind of not really in continuity.
Yeah.
But he had her, like, pinned down by a construction site and said, "Why are you leaving us clues to the Clue Master's crimes? Blah, blah, blah. You're on his side. Blah, blah, blah." And she whacks him with a brick. And, like, runs off.
Yeah.
Or, no, he pulls off the mask and he's like, "You're a girl!" And then she whacks him with a brick. And then she runs off. And then later in the cave, Alfred's like, when she got the better of you in the fight.
Yeah.
And Tim's like, "She surprised me!" And she just surprised me, that's all. And Alfred said, "I was not implying otherwise, young sir." And then they fell in love. And
yeah.
Bruce was probably like, "Oh, he had a nice, normal girlfriend. There's like $300,000 down the tube."
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
The secret is that after that, Bruce Wayne took the building back. It's like, "Well, he doesn't like you. Shoo, go away." I like how he fell in love with Stephanie because she gave him brain damage. Like, that would explain so much that has happened since.
No, actually, she chased him. He was still... going out with Ariana.
Yeah.
And even while he was totally in love with her, mm-hmm. Stephanie got it into her mind that he was in love with Stephanie.
And that's even
so
worse.
So as he's like going off to see his girlfriend after the quake,
yeah,
she's like, "Oh, poor boy, he's got a serious case of the Steffs." And then he's like going off and like gazing adoringly at his girlfriend as she sleeps in like a shelter or something.
Oh, that's a little creepy.
Yeah, but still. It's a public place. You can look at people sleeping if it's in a public place.
Maybe. We'll let it slide this time.
He was young.
Yeah. He's really better yet.
But she kept pursuing him until he basically fell in love with her. It was that, or just beat her off with a brick, I guess.
Yeah.
But...
Or, you know, hey, restraining order.
Yeah.
Jeez. What, didn't he have a rich girlfriend, too, at one point? Because I thought that her... Or no, maybe she had a mob boss for her father. Because I think I had her mixed up with Ariana, because they were both, like, fairly slim, black-haired girls. Oh, you know what?
Remember.
That was during, that story where Stephanie died. War crimes?
Yeah.
I
missed out on that because of the whole Batman's a jerk, a character I like is dying horribly, and every single thing about this,
yeah,
the world that they live in is miserable and unhappy.
Yeah.
So I'll just skip a few issues.
War Games, that was the name of it. That was not a good story at all.
Okay, your last.
My last one is from Grant Morrison's run on New X-Men, as if I don't talk about Grant Morrison enough. Basically, there's a new character introduced called Zorn. He was a Chinese mutant with a... basically, they explained that there was a sun in his head. And don't think too hard about it, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's cool in execution. It makes him super smart. It gives him, like, enhanced strength, powers, that kind of thing. And he was locked up in China ever since he was a kid when the sun first opened up. And basically China used him to power, like, certain things. Like, basically it was like a cheap power plant.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so the X-Men rescue him, set him free. He goes and basically joins a monastery and kind of reevaluates his life.
Do I really want to be used as a cheap power plant?
Because when they freed him, he actually was like, you know, this world is horrible, and I'm going to destroy it right now just by turning my sun into a black hole. Because you can do that if your power is having a sun. And so Cyclops is like, oh crap, we just freed someone who's going to destroy the world. And he ends up getting Emma Frost to basically implant knowledge of how to speak Chinese into his head, and he talks him down off the ledge. He's like, you know, the world sucks, but we're trying to make it a better place. There are good people. The usual speech.
Yeah.
So he goes, he joins
them. Please, please don't kill us all.
Yeah, exactly. So Zorn goes and joins the monastery, and eventually they reach a point where they have to go and get him back. Like, things are going down, and they need, you know, heavy help. And so they go and get him. He's like, yes, I'll join you. I don't like fighting, but this is the right thing to do.
Okay. Okay.
So he sticks around. He becomes a healer for the team. There is one issue that's just dedicated to him spending time in Mutant Town in New York, which is where just there's tons of mutants, and it's basically policed by the X-Men off and on. And there's a young kid who's been like his mutant power kicked in, and it wasn't like the kind of power that pretty people get. He turns into a monster.
Oh.
So Zorn basically like is there with him as he dies, and it's all in the form of his diaries and things that he's learning and like experiencing America and life and helping people. Very touching, like really good issue. So later in the run, maybe about 8 months before the end of it, maybe a little bit more, it's revealed that Zorn is not actually Zorn at all. He's Magneto, who has been undercover and like infiltrating the X-Men this entire time as part of his big plan to take over the world again. So he reveals
what
himself.
What happened to
Zorn? He never existed. It was all a plot.
That's an elaborate plot.
Yeah, it was very elaborate.
He should consider fake mustaches.
But he ends up like when he finally enacts his plan and, you know, like wrecks the X-Men, sends some off into space, like tosses others in the ocean, whatever, and takes over Manhattan. Like, everyone else, when the X-Men come back, they're like, you know, where is Zorn at? Like, why are you here? And he's like, Zorn never existed, blah, 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 blah. They're like, no, Zorn was a healer. He was a great guy. I like him more than you. And they just do this whole, like, guilt trip slash, like, you're worthless and a relic. You shouldn't be around anymore. Bring back Zorn because he's what we want more of. And he's freaking out, like, I am Magneto. Like, don't you understand? Like, I am, you know, the real deal. They're like, no, Zorn is the real deal. Who are you? And eventually, Wolverine cuts his head off. But, like, Zorn as Magneto is one of those twists where you never see it coming, but when you go back and reread, you see all these little tips and hints that it was there.
Like an actual continuity plan twist.
Like, using continuity instead of ignoring it. Like, even the sun in the head thing, it's, like, magnetism, apparently. Yeah. You can create like something super magnetic where it's basically a black hole. You can explain away basically everything Zorn does in the comic as being Magneto using his powers in a new way. But like, hands down, my favorite twist in comics. Because it was just well executed. It didn't come, when you first see it, you're like, oh, whatever. But then you look and you're like, oh, like this is actually really good. Oh. It adds a lot to the story. And it also tied into the overall theme of War Since X-Men, which was that, like, we've been through the old ways, and the old ways don't work anymore, so it's time for something new. And Magneto, being Zorn, was something new, and it was wonderful, but then he regresses, and it's horrible. So it's like, bang, there's your moral of your story. But that was good stuff. And I think we're done.
I think we are.
You did three, I did three. Anything else you want to mention, or...?
I think we're good.
All right. Thanks for listening to the new and improved, revised continuity off on the forecast. We'll see you next week. Give us a review on iTunes. Visit the site, fourthletter.net. And we'll catch you later.
Sweet. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping, no stopping, no stopping, no stopping.
still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping, no stopping, no stopping, no stopping. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. 4 o'clock and I'm still rocking. No stopping, no stopping, no stopping, no stopping.